We've got a fun little exploration of yin and yang here at the end of the hour. Actually, we are more concerned with the yang of the written language. For every pencil, there's an eraser. Every black pen mark, some whiteout. For every keystroke, there's a possible delete. Can't have one without the other. And from the moment people began using writing to transmit messages, the annoying and miraculous properties of written language created a demand to erase or hide messages, to control who sees it. The power of language being written down is also its weakness. It's written down forever. How can I selectively send a written message? Secret couriers can be bribed and bought. Email addresses can be hacked. The NSA gets everything, right? This cultural tension about the written word is behind an amazing new book, Prisoners, Lovers, and Spies, the story of invisible ink from Herodotus to Al-Qaeda. Historian Christy McCrackis is the author. She's a professor at that mecca of robotics and software design, Georgia Tech. She says what's so fascinating about invisible ink is how low-tech it can be. As simple as one part lemons, one part hot air.
Lemons, as you mentioned, are the old standby. You can use, if you don't have lemons, you can use limes or orange juice or any kind of citrus juice. And it's as simple as when you were a kid, you just squeeze it out. You can get a Q-tip or a toothpick and you dip it in and you write your message on a piece of paper. And then you let it dry and then you put it over heat. And lo and behold, poof, you see a secret message.
And the more complicated chemistry in invisible ink?
Oh, one of the more complicated ones I found in the Stasi archives used something called cerium, which was a rare earth metal, and it sped up the process, so you only left a small amount of the substance on the piece of paper, so spies could use it much more effectively than lemon juice. Plus, there was only one developer, so lemon juice isn't good for spies because you just put it over heat and you can see the secret message.
But boy, those East Germans certainly, you know, cerium.
Yeah, have you ever heard of it?
I've never heard of it, but I've heard of the Stasi, that's for sure. The the interesting thing about your book, Prisoners, Lovers, and Spies, the story of invisible ink from Herodotus to Al-Qaeda, when somebody uses invisible ink, a child, they're really walking in the footsteps of the ancients who've, you know, used invisible ink going back centuries.
Invisible ink is very old. It goes way back to the Greeks or to the early modern period. The Greeks used something which in one way was more modern. They would hide things on a wax tablet and scrape away the wax, and you'd have a hidden message underneath. So that was really hidden writing, and it's similar to what people use today. Like Al-Qaeda, they use what's called digital steganography, and they hide messages in photographs attached to an email.
And how would you say the digital world has enhanced the interest in hidden messages as opposed to making it obsolete, which is what you would probably think off the top of your head?
Well, yeah, some people think invisible ink, they think of lemon juice and children, but it's actually a very important part of spying. And the digital world has taken the ancient Greeks and just used a much fancier technology for the same principle.
Do you think the digital folks will come up with the stories of hiding messages that can match the ones that you came up with from the ancients, from World War II, from really down through history?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I uncovered the fact that they thought Al-Qaeda was hiding digital messages in pornography, and it turns out they were pornographic messages on websites. So it's in use now, and the CIA won't talk to me about it because it's so sensitive.
What about the World War II era, which seems to be sort of the golden age of spies a la Le Carré?
Well, you're right. Yeah, well, the World War II era was a golden age of spies for invisible ink as well. And America didn't want to enter that war at all because invisible ink isn't just a matter of defacing a piece of paper. It's a matter of intercepting mail. So they had to launch a whole office of censorship in order to intercept the letters that had secret messages on them. And then you had this hidden war between the Germans and Americans, and especially the British.
Who was particularly good at using invisible ink down through history?
The British. Their history goes way back to the early modern period with Queen Elizabeth and Mary, Queen of Scots. But then in World War I and World War II, the British were superb at using secret ink, and they were enamored with the whole business. They took it very secretly, and they won the secret ink war with the Germans.
I mean, I guess if you're going to win some war, the secret ink war is a reasonable consolation prize to the loss of your empire, right?
That's right. Well, I mean, actually, you mentioned the word empire. It was all closely related to empire. 100 years ago, the British, as you know, did have an empire, and they had colonies dotting the whole world, and they claimed that they could intercept mail across the whole world. They said they had a grip on the world's correspondence, and that's precisely what the NSA is really doing now electronically with blanket surveillance.
And the Germans weren't slouches here. I mean, you mentioned the Stasi from the Cold War period in East Germany, but the Germans during World War II had some pretty interesting techniques.
Yeah, they developed very sophisticated techniques. The trick was you could use a simple thing like a medicine or whatever, but they developed more sophisticated techniques so people couldn't develop the ink.
Well, I mean, I'm familiar with, you know, Nazis as dentists, you know, causing great pain during the Nazi period. But there's a dental element here to your ink story, which is pretty fascinating.
Oh. That's one of my favorite stories, is the Nazi spy who hid invisible ink in his tooth. So there was a Norwegian coal miner who agreed to work for the Nazis, and they parachuted him into England, and he landed in a field, and they caught him, and they said, well, do you have any secret ink? And at first he said no, he denied it. And then he was detained in an interrogation center, and he lost the cap on one of his teeth. And so he had to kind of confess what happened. And then they found another little baggie with quinine in his molar. And so they took it out and found that he could use that as an invisible ink. Of course, it's, you know, a lot of these methods, you think, God, did they really use them? I mean, you have to go to a dentist in order to use your secret ink.
What does it say about our interest in writing and communication that we've had this very long-standing interest, almost obsession with the secret messages, invisible messages, hidden messages?
Well, in the world of espionage, secret communication is key. I mean, if you can't communicate secretly, there's no espionage, there's no spying. And you've got to communicate with your agents, and usually your agents are in some foreign country, or you don't want someone to intercept their messages. So you have to have secret communication. I mean, it's totally essential. So aside from the fact, but we also have this kind of childlike sense of wonder, like, cool, a secret, we got to uncover what it is.
Have you ever used invisible ink?
Oh, yes, yep.
Would you like to tell me about it? Would you like to share?
Share. Well, aside from having fun with it and writing secret messages, you know, you can write personal romantic messages as well, right, if you're shy about expressing your thoughts. Of course, I want to be able to communicate secretly, you know, if you don't want Big Brother listening to you, right? You're tempted to say, well, maybe I should just use the old-fashioned way and communicate with secret ink if the NSA is going to read all my mail, right?
So the NSA may be causing a boom in sales of invisible ink recipes of all kinds.
You are right, exactly.
Christy Makrakis, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Christy Makrakis is professor of history at Georgia Tech, author of Prisoners, Lovers, and Spies, the story of invisible ink from Herodotus to Al-Qaeda.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.